Mini episode 1665 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1665. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good pal, Anthony Patrone from the Unheard Scene. And actually, most of the times we've had him on previously, he's been here to talk about music, but not today. This is a much more serious subject here. Anthony accepted my invitation to talk about what's going on with this Israel-Hamas war. When you look at the Venn diagram, basically, of all the FDH Lounge dignitaries, you have a number of them that are following what's going on. But anybody that's willing to come on and talk about it, I had one of them say to me, and I won't mention who, because I wouldn't want to get him in any trouble. But he was just like, if I come on and say the things I really think, I could be blacklisted because I'm going to sound really anti-Palestinian. I'm like, well, I don't want to cost you any opportunities, pal. I get it. So it's a sensitive kind of a thing here as far as what's going on.
We're not getting anybody fired, Rick.
Well, yeah, we're not getting anybody fired, particularly with new things about to start here for some of us. But, not looking to get anybody fired, not looking to do anything like that. And again, there's a thing of like, on the one hand, well, what do we know? Well, what does anybody know? Because there's people that I follow in terms of this, Ian Bremmer, Peter Zeihan, people who I follow for their sort of geopolitical, reach on things here. And they don't even know. They're just throwing out their best ideas. When it comes to something like this, what does anybody truly know? We're as qualified as anybody. We're going to give you our thoughts. Anthony, thank you for accepting my invitation to come on in and break this down.
Absolutely. Although I did take a good laugh when I found out I was talking about a war.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you're doing this, and like I said, I appreciate, and I don't want to throw any shade at anybody by saying I appreciate that you had the guts to do this, because I don't want to throw any shade at anybody else. I get where people are coming from, man. It's sensitive. You do not want to be... people are willing to take anything out of context these days, dude. You can get canceled for the tiniest of things. So I get where the fear kind of comes in, and I think it's legitimate. It's a thing where, just in doing this show, I can't duck this because we basically said, nothing is off topic. We're going to talk about anything relevant that's going on. And this is a thing where I know from talking to you off air, I mean, we are, broadly, I think, basically in the same place here on this as far as if you're just talking about the part of Israel and the Israeli people versus Hamas. We're not talking about the people in Gaza, a lot of whom are basically Hamas's hostages here, but Hamas itself is an organization. I mean, it's a pretty cut and dried good and evil kind of a thing here. I mean, they are basically the equivalent of ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of them other scumbags at this point, and have been for some time. And this is a thing where I texted you a thing earlier today. I was looking for it on the internet just to prove that it existed because I had heard about it. That they did like a kids show with like a Mickey Mouse puppet like, hey kids, let's all go kill people of certain religions. Yeah. Like that's the kind of people that Hamas are. And that's the thing.
Mean, the guys strapping innocent Palestinians to them.
Yep.
In fighting this war. Nothing shocks me.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Like, there's a phrase you hear a lot these days when people are talking about something, whether it's a product or whatever, it's a feature, not a bug. To Hamas, right. Dead Palestinians are a feature. I mean, that's their PR. They're dying for a sympathetic picture here. And again, and they're going to get plenty of sympathetic pictures. TV's going to do their dirty work for them as far as showing, because again, the siege of the Gaza Strip, I mean, it's not going to be pretty. And I think you and I, this is another thing we talked about off air. I think we're largely on the same page here. I think Israel has to do the best job they can do humanly possible under the circumstances here to try to avoid civilian casualties. But Hamas is trying to jack up the civilian casualties wherever they can. It was either them or Islamic Jihad that bombed the hospital, and they, for a while there, they got everybody to blame it on Israel right on cue. Mm-hmm. So it's like they are ruthless. They'll be killing their own people and doing everything they can to make it look like it's Israel that's doing it.
Right. And it's sad because you look at the thousands of people sitting on the Rafah border of Egypt. They're not going to get out. Egypt's worried. Something's going to happen. Hamas has been telling everybody that Israel won't do a ceasefire. They want a ceasefire to open the Rafah border because they want to send in aid. The United Nations is down there to send in aid. And I heard President Biden was in there today saying, if we can get Hamas to do the ceasefire, yes, you will. You will ceasefire, because you got to get aid in there. I mean, the United Nations have a whole bunch of trucks of medicine and food and all kinds of things to help those people.
Yeah.
So they just need it. Egypt wants a ceasefire. They're not going to go into war, and I don't blame them.
Yeah. And Egypt, I mean, and this is one of these things like the echoes of history. Egypt supposedly had a little bit of intel that this thing was coming, which, again, and that's its own other separate matter of how, I mean, this is one of the great intelligence failures of human history. But I mean, like when you think about the Yom Kippur War 50 years ago, when Egypt and Syria sneak attacked Israel, and 50 years later, Egypt's like, hey, yo, we got some intel. You might be about to get sneak attacked. You know,
well, you're going to laugh because I told a friend of mine who I talked to just a little bit ago that I was doing this podcast with you, and he says, oh, you're doing about the war on Israel. You might want to go back to about 1100.
Well, yeah. Yeah, listen. So... It goes way back, and there's a lot of things here, too, and there's a thing where, again, I have believed for a long period of time here, again, and a lot of my friends, particularly the friends I have on my side of the political spectrum, a lot of them don't believe this, particularly any of my fundamentalist friends, but I have believed in a two-state solution, that if you can make Gaza and West Bank, but they have to be governable. Like, you have to have sane people, you have to have legitimate partners for peace, which do not exist at this time, because the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank is corrupt, and they're basically a bunch of cowards. They're afraid to stick their necks out for peace. Hamas is a bunch of homicidal a-holes. So you don't have that right now, but like long term, that's what you need. And some of the stuff that's come out about Netanyahu is that he was secretly propping up Hamas all this time because like they were basically sort of doing his dirty work. Like, hey guys, we can't do a two-state solution. I got nobody to work with here. So I have long believed that he's a corrupt idiot, and I think he's been proven, I've been proven correct by this based on the way that it's happened. So yeah, there's ancient wrongs here, I think, on both sides. The way that Israel got established in 1948, Palestinians getting driven out, I mean, there's not a lot of clean hands here, but the whole thing here, the Hamas insistence that Israel be wiped out so that Palestine can be restored to what it was in 1948, you can't do that. I mean, not to get too juvenile with like two rights don't make a wrong, but you cannot uproot the decades and decades and decades to give them the whole pie. You just can't do it.
Right.
I mean, there might be legitimate grievances about how, you know, some of the things happened and everything. And that's why, again, trying to work out a deal, you know, where they have some of the land and, you know, Jerusalem's ultimately the biggest sticking point on this and what they do with that. But other than that, I mean, the two-state solution, you know, but another thing that I'd said to you off air is I'd read this a long time ago, and it's true. Somebody made the point of like, you don't ever have peace that comes about, unfortunately, unless somebody's defeated. And it's a thing where you talk about, you know, the Yom Kippur War with Israel. It was in Egypt. It was Anwar Sadat that was actually, I was reading about it in recent days. He was more aggressive about wanting to make peace in the mid to late 70s than Israel was at first, because he got that ass beat in the war. He knew it was going to happen again if they didn't get off that track. And so basically, you know, he knew he'd been beaten and he was ready to talk. And it's a thing of like, we're looking at this and it's like, it's going to be brutal and bloody and there's going to be a lot of civilians that die in the process and it's unfortunate. And we've come a long way as a society since, you know, a lot of times I don't think, you know, with the Oppenheimer movie this summer, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, I mean, I'm not going to second guess because I wasn't there, but it's just an awful thing that that many civilians had to die. I hope we can all agree on that, you know. And I don't, it wasn't much of a consideration at the time. These things are more of a consideration now, and I think we're better off for it. But it's like, it's got to come to a head, bro, because like, if this, Israel didn't have a lot of deterrence value clearly before this thing started. And it's like, if they have no deterrence value coming out of this thing, the next war is probably going to be a world war. It's going to get out of control.
My big worry is Hezbollah thinking, hey, there's fighting. Let's go take control.
Yeah.
And if Hezbollah takes control, they got Iran's money.
Yep.
and I hate to say this, but a big stimulant from the United States that they just got too.
Yeah, the $6 billion, and it's a thing where, oh, but it's for these purposes, whatever. But the way that you and I know the way that money works, that like anytime you get money in one area, you don't have to spend money in another area. So
Right. Is
that money going directly for Iran to prop up terrorists? It is not. But it's, freeing up money.
Right. So, but it's, you worry about any groups trying to take advantage of it. They were talking today, I heard about Islamic jihadists,
the
hospital, and other groups that are trying to rise up and take advantage.
Yeah,
that's the big scary. You got Hezbollah sitting there in Lebanon.
Yeah.
So we just don't know. Like, you want to dismantle the Hamas.
Yeah.
But the problem is who runs Gaza.
Well, yeah, afterwards. And that's where I teased this to you off air. Like, if the United Nations was worth a crap, you just say we send in a UN peacekeeping force. And I'd still like to see it floated. Just, I mean, I know it's not going to go anywhere, but I mean, that's the only real answer right there, is to do that. It's going to take some kind of multinational force in there, because they're not going to trust if it's the Israelis. They're not going to trust if it's Americans, and we're not going to send Americans to do that anyways. But, you know, what do you do afterwards? Yeah, I mean, there are so many questions here that are so difficult, and I don't have an answer for that one. What I do have an answer for is that, again, I think Israel just has to stay on the offensive here at this point. And again, they got to do the best job they can. They absolutely have to. They, you know, they owe it to themselves, because the media is going to be making them look bad at every turn. They owe it to really all of humanity not to be out there, you know, slaughtering civilians. But that's not the way they've ever done it. Like, anytime I've seen stuff on the news in years past, Israel blew up a thing that turned out to be a civilian high-rise building. Yeah, how many weapons and, you know, other munitions and chemical agents and things like that was Hamas storing in there? This is what they do. They hide behind civilians. They're cowards. This is what they do.
Hide,
this is their playbook.
They hide 100 feet deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the sad part is, they hide in those tunnels, and, you know, you hear, well, why can't you just bomb the tunnels? You can't. They now have hostages.
Right.
And those hostages could be scattered throughout those tunnels.
Yep.
So if you start bombing those tunnels, you might start killing hostages, and that could be all bad.
Yeah. And that's where, look, these are, when it comes to evil things here, these are some of the cleverest people on God's green earth, unfortunately. There was a thing I was seeing on TV the other day, and this is a thing where it's so ridiculous as far as how they play the international community for suckers, but it's still funny. I can't help but laugh. I was seeing, like, where they were digging up water lines, like, ha, 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 the international community gave us money for infrastructure, but we're going to turn these things into rocket launchers. Like, that's their friggin' mentality, man. This whole thing of, like, you can't...
It's all about them. It's not about the innocent Palestinians that are there. It's all about them.
Yeah. But then, in the next breath, they cry about, we have no infrastructure, you don't care about us, we're the world's largest open-air prison. They're the world's largest open-air prison because that's what they've made it. They cynically exploit the people that they have there. I mean, Israel's going to lose the PR war at every turn. I mean, that's just, I was seeing stuff on CNN in recent days, and I'm not normally somebody that's quick to go bash, you know, Jake Tapper the way that some folks are, but there was some of the stuff there. He was like, the siege of Gaza. Like, what did you think it was going to be? I mean, there's no pretty way to take out Hamas. This is sort of like the equivalent version of, there's a lot of people right now, and there's a lot of people, unfortunately, showing their true colors that are saying, what did you expect from this? And there's a thing where I know there's a talk show you listen to, David Pakman, and I saw a thing, he did a segment on how he's losing supporters at this point. Because yes. He's got support people in his audience that are supporters of Hamas. And they're like, what did you think resistance looked like, David? What did you think it was going to be? You see people at some of these Palestinian rallies that have pictures of hang gliders and everything like that. Like, this is not the high moral ground when you were defending those people, dude.
Yeah, it's rough to say anything.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, and that's, I actually have a few friends from the region.
Yeah.
Who have very powerful thoughts on it.
Sure.
One posts something every day on Facebook about mm-hmm. the war. And, you know, it's very hard to say anything because you don't know who you're going to offend.
Yeah.
David Pakman tries to be as real as he can, but, you know, sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, he's got people in the audience that are basically pro-Hamas, and they're basically telling him so at this point in time. And that's a thing where, again, I think for all the thing about, oh, there's people that are afraid to say what they're thinking right now, I think anybody that's out there being pro-Hamas, I wouldn't mind them losing their jobs. I wouldn't mind anything like that, okay? Because it's a thing where, like, this whole thing of, like, definitions and everything like this, I'm going to propose something here, Anthony, that I think that you would like. That if we just, for the sake of argument here, define terrorism as killing and terrorizing innocent people, if we do that, I propose, Anthony, the Mr. Mackey rule for the Middle East. Everybody ought to be able to agree to this. Terrorism is bad, okay?
Okay, got you.
I mean, that's the first step towards Middle Eastern peace, Anthony. It's the Mr. Mackey rule. If you can't agree to that, then you have no place in the conversation.
I got you.
I knew you'd appreciate that.
the big worry for me, though, is I was watching a story last night on local terrorism. Mm-hmm. You had just talked about Hamas supporters listening to our shows and everything.
Yeah.
There are Hamas supporters in the area.
Yeah.
That want to kill Jews, that want to kill Muslims. That's scary.
Yeah.
Because they're in this country and they're Hamas supporters.
Yeah.
And you don't know who they are. They could be just a regular person walking down the road. You know. Could be walking down the street and go, oh, I don't like you. You're a Jew. Boom.
Well, yeah. You know? And that's where, again, you get a lot of things happening domestically here. Unfortunately, I think there was a 6-year-old Arab kid in, I think it was Chicago or somewhere, that got killed. And that's a terrible thing, obviously. And I think somebody else was talking about, I want to go to Dearborn, Michigan and go hunting for Arabs there. So you get that happening on both sides, and it's pretty awful. Dearborn is an area, though, as far as, like, when you're talking about, because I think there's like 100,000 Arabs there, and you think about it, dude. I mean, you always have bad apples that are present in any community. So out of like 100,000 people, that's a lot of potential bad apples. Even if 99% of people are cool, that's a lot of, like, dangerous people running around. And that's a thing where I had a friend that was telling me years ago that he travels a decent amount on business. And he just happened to wake up on 9/11 on business, staying at a hotel in Dearborn, Michigan. And he was just, like, the uncertainty that all the rest of us felt. Like, imagine being there. And imagine, you know, you're not knowing what's going to happen and everything like that. And you're thinking, you're not the stereotype, but you're just thinking to yourself, like, gee whiz, is this the best place in the world for me to be? Like, there's probably a lot of people here who hate my guts.
They're here, right?
They are. And, like, our country, I have to say, I mean, there's an underbelly of people here that are, there's a lot of people that are consumed by hatred, and a lot of them that are, I'm not going to say even worse, not so bright, because it's not even worse, but that's a bad combination. Like, I remember seeing a thing, I think this was like 2012. There was, like, this was in Wisconsin somewhere. And it was a temple full of Sikh people that got, unfortunately, shot up. And this stupid redneck thought he was going killing Muslims. Like, first of all, you shouldn't walk into any random religious place anyways and start shooting people up. But it was like, these guys with the turbans on their head. Yeah, those are Sikhs, dude. Like, it's like insult to injury. You're killing the wrong religion. You shouldn't be going around killing Muslims anyways, but they're not even Muslims. We just have too many dumb people.
And that's the problem. Yeah. And so I'm going to say this. She probably won't get mad, but I have a new daughter-in-law that's Muslim.
Yes.
And she gets a lot of stereotypes. And she's like, they don't even understand what they're talking about.
Yeah.
No, they don't. They just see the dark skin and figure, okay, that's it. We're good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
This country can be a dangerous place a lot of times, like this. For things like that. I remember, like, after 9/11, one of my best friends growing up was this Indian kid. And I've been in touch with him intermittently over the years. Facebook's made it better. We've been in more regular touch. But 2001 was before Facebook. I just remember reaching out to him at the time after 9/11. Like, hey, man, stay safe. Like, you know, like, there's a lot of dumb people out there and could be out to just kill random brown people. And this was years before the Sikh massacre happened. Like, you know that about this country. Like, there's going to be people getting killed that aren't even who the dumbass killers thought they were in the first place. And
right, because people don't realize that the Middle East is a lot like the United States.
It is.
Everybody's got different religions. Everybody's got different beliefs. Everybody's got different thoughts. Not everybody is who you think they are.
Oh, yeah. And that's where, and there's a lot of different things here, too. There's a lot of Christians that are in the region there. And there was a guy, this was like, and it's so funny, you get into these cultural things and cultural differences and stuff like that. Like, years ago, I remember I sold a used car to this Egyptian guy. I think he was one of these local Egyptian Christian churches around here. And it was a thing where it really threw him when I went to sign over the title for it, because he's like, is that legal? Is that valid? And it turns out, because I write left-handed, there's a thing in these Arab countries that it's, like, illegitimate. Because I guess, like, there's places where, like, they don't have toilet paper and they use their hand to wipe, and most people use their left hand. So they think it's kind of sus whenever anybody signs anything with their left hand. I'm like, is this real life? Is this a real thing? And it turns out it is, Anthony.
That was more information than I really needed to know.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's bound to happen on this show, but
I will ask my daughter-in-law that question and see what her response is.
Ask her about that, yeah. And tell her that your friend got questioned on whether his signature was valid on a title transfer because of it.
I to listen to this whole podcast.
Yeah. So. Well, tell her that she can skip to about the 21-minute mark or wherever the heck this is. And you'll get to hear the ass wiping with your hand story. But, you know,
I'm so glad my brother's not sitting with me right now. You'd hear him laugh.
He probably would be. Yeah, good old Matthew would probably be laughing his head off here on this sensitive subject. But again, you know, try to give a little levity where we can with a really sensitive subject. But yeah, I mean, this is where... I mean, there's a chance that this thing goes completely off the rails, turns into a regional war, everything like that, that by Israel pressing and doing what it's going to do, you already saw last night as we're taping this, there were like mini riots all over the Middle East after that hospital got bombed. And of course, the Arab street, as they refer to it, everybody just assumed it was Israel. Everyone believed it was Israel that did it. And you're going to have this. And that's where, again, a lot of these Arab governments, they can't make peace with Israel until they get their own people pacified on the subject. That's why, again, Israel with the Abraham Accords and this other stuff, oh, we'll just make peace with these other countries. They thought they could make peace with Saudi Arabia without addressing this first. And it's like, nah, bro, this is not going to happen as long as this is an issue. But the first step towards establishing peace in Gaza and the West Bank is by destroying Hamas. And then, like you said, what comes after that? I don't know. I mean, that's the $64,000 question. But what
same thing with Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Well, yes, and that's
you get rid of Hezbollah who runs Lebanon.
Yeah.
So it's a rough thing, man.
Well, Hezbollah. I mean, look, Israel's gone in there a bunch of times. 1982, pretty brutally. I think 2006. Like, they may wreak a lot of havoc on Hezbollah, but Hezbollah will live to fight another day because they're not cornered the way that Hamas is. Hamas is surrounded on all sides here. And
well, by water, except for that one spot with Egypt.
Yeah, water, yeah. Fence, you know, and basically, yeah, I mean, Hezbollah, they'll just retreat into Lebanon when they're getting beat bad enough, and they'll live to fight another day, unfortunately, but Hamas, I mean, they got to go because here's the thing, again, I think we agree on this main point here, that again, is there the chance this thing turns into the kind of huge regional war that just could, worst case scenario, could go nuclear, could be oil goes to $300 a gallon, could be all these things. All these things are possible now. I think all these things are almost guaranteed if it doesn't happen now and Israel has no deterrent value and Hamas comes back at them again. Because right now, I don't know if you've seen this, but like Hamas in recent days, some of their leaders, it's gotten out, they've been like, oh, wow, this is like Israel's like more gung-ho than we thought they were going to be. I don't know how they could have miscalculated that badly, but they did.
And I've heard like, Hamas is also reaching out to Iran.
Yes, like they are scared. Like, are they ever going to be as scared ever again if Israel lets them off the mat? It's just not going to be the case. Like, this has to happen at some point. And if it happens the next time, it's going to be worse and bloodier.
They have to free Gaza.
Yeah.
Really, truly, they have to free Gaza.
Yeah. And then what happens at that point? Again, we're not, that's the thorniest of all the questions. Maybe there is something the UN can do in that kind of a way. It's the only real answer is to get outside parties in there. And again, no individual country is going to want to do it themselves. Nobody's going to stick their hand up in the air like, oh, we'll send our guys over. But
right, no.
That's the
no,
thing.
No, because no individual country is going to want to take blame if things go wrong.
Well, and which they will, because, you know, it's not going to be easy to reestablish everything. But yeah, I mean, how it goes from here, again, we don't know that part. Nobody really can. But as far as Israel doing what they got to do, again, being as good as they can on all of the stuff as far as, you know, minimizing the civilian casualties and everything else. And I trust that they are going to do that because they've done that in every situation thus far. They've always avoided it as much as they can. Hamas is going to be out to make as much stuff look badly as possible. So it's going to be unfortunate. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Unfortunately, that's the only thing I think we do know.
I do know that you're correct, but we will see. President Biden has asked Congress to get an aid package together for both countries.
Yeah.
So if Israel can dismantle Hamas, then maybe we can look at other countries and say, hey, we're giving them aid. Let's rebuild this country and make them free.
Them and Ukraine. And again, there are a lot of people that are on my side of the fence that are not in favor of Ukraine aid. I am not one of those people. I want to continue, you know, seeing that thing through. So, yes, any kind of joint thing with Israel and Ukraine might be able to pass. So, you know, yeah, it's a thorny situation, and hopefully it's not going to be too long in going on, but I think the Israeli Defense Forces were saying today it probably will be, and unfortunately that seems most realistic. So, yeah, it's going to get worse.
What I pray for now is a ceasefire so that they will open, that Egypt will open that Rafah border.
Yeah.
Let all the foreign nationals out.
Yeah.
And get over the Palestinians.
Yes.
That's what we need to see moving forward.
Yeah. As much as can be done for the poor people that are being held hostage there by Hamas. And again, seeing it through and after that.
There are thousands sitting at the Rafah borders.
There are. It's a bad situation.
Thousands of Palestinians that won't get out because they're not foreign nationals.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, we just got to pray.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone should be praying. I have been praying in recent days. I hope this goes as well as it can possibly go. We all have to be realistic that there's, you know, there's going to be bad days ahead. And yeah, it's just a lot of, you know, the gates of hell have sort of been unleashed by this whole thing, unfortunately. But are there any other angles of this thing that we didn't cover in your mind, Anthony? Any other thoughts you have?
I think we did pretty good.
I think so too, man. Top that, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News,
FDA. You know, I sat and watched to prepare for this, I said, yeah, watch CNBC and Fox News, which are two channels I never watch.
Yeah. Well, you watch CNBC when they're showing some of the, don't you watch like Mark Cuban or West Texas Investors or stuff?
Shark Tank.
Okay. Well, isn't there like a West Texas Investors thing that they used to have?
That's been off the air for years.
Oh, okay. Okay. By the way, I the one thing about Shark Tank here, I'm just waiting for the trademark infringement part to be addressed here. I keep hearing like my dad watches the show and he refers to like Mr. Wonderful. I'm like, somebody needs to be paying royalties to Paul Orndorff's family. There's only one Mr. Wonderful, and it's Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, baby.
Somebody let him know.
Yes.
If he's still alive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff is not alive, but his family could definitely use the money. So
we'll somebody let his family know that there's a rich guy in California stealing them. His name.
That's right. That's right. So we'll be monitoring that just as closely as the Middle East. And again, but Anthony, thank you so much for being on. I knew we would have a great conversation together, and we have. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, brother.
Thanks so much, buddy. And thank you all for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1665.